message today is a little, well, it's going to come off, it could come off sounding a little more political than normal. Hopefully, as you're listening, you'll realize it's not political at all. And I will also like to start by saying that just by its nature, I'm going to be doing a little defining of terms early on, so stick with me. I promise you it's important. The title of the talk is Nationalism is Destroying Spirituality and Society. Nationalism is not to be confused with patriotism. Both words are normally used in so vague a way that any definition is liable to be challenged, but we must draw a distinction between them, since they are two different and even opposing ideas. By patriotism, I mean a devotion to a particular place and a particular way of life, which one believes to be the best in the world, but has no wish to force on other people. Patriotism is by nature defensive, both militarily and culturally. Nationalism, on the other hand, nationalism is inseparable from the desire for power. The abiding purpose of every nationalist is to secure more power and more prestige. A nationalist is one who thinks solely or mainly in terms of competitive prestige. His thoughts always turn to victories, defeats, triumphs, and humiliations. He sees history, especially contemporary history, as the endless rise and decline of power units. And every event that happens seems to him a demonstration that his own side is on the upgrade and some hated rival is on the downgrade. But finally, it's important not to confuse nationalism with the worship of success. See, the nationalist does not go on the principle of simply ganging up on the strongest side. On the contrary, having picked his side, he persuades himself that it is the strongest side and is able to stick to his belief even when the facts are overwhelmingly against him. Nationalism is power hunger tempered by self-deception. Every nationalist is capable of the most flagrant dishonesty, but he is also, since he's conscious of serving something bigger than himself, unshakably certain of being in the right. Now, while that sounds like it could have been written about people in a particular political movements of modern day politics, that was actually written in 1945 about Nazism by George Orwell. I've read it here because I believe it is a helpful distinction between patriotism and nationalism. I believe his understanding of nationalism is helpful and understanding the damage that it is causing to spirituality and to society. And finally, I can't help but believe it is sometimes helpful to recognize that this kind of thinking is nothing new. It's not just a modern American problem. It's a problem with humanity. A problem that we tend to repeat on a consistent basis throughout history. A problem that frequently wraps itself in religion and stomps on spirituality in the process. And that makes me realize that I'm now going to need to define how I'm using the words religion and spirituality. The way that I am using spirituality is to describe beliefs and practices that give a sense of connection to something bigger than ourselves and possibly points towards a fuller understanding of the meaning of life. It helps us to recognize our connectedness like we've been talking about for the past several weeks and encourages us to be our better selves. Now, religion, on the other hand, is the formalization of spirituality. It tends to include ritual and obedience and dogma. Understood that way, spirituality is an experience that's very freeing and very connecting at times. It frees us from what is sometimes a mundane experience and opens us up to the possibilities. It connects us with something larger than ourselves, and through that, connects us with others who are practicing a similar spirituality. Religion, on the other hand, tends to narrow our perspective. And frequently it invites us to trust the spiritual leaders to the point of blindly following. Now, as you might imagine, that makes religion a very powerful tool for those seeking power through the support of the masses. In the U.S., we've slowly drifted from patriotism to nationalism. You can look no further than Colin Kaepernick to see it. Kaepernick is the NFL player who started a protest movement of other NFL players and other figures, sports figures, by taking a knee during the national anthem. The idea is to bring attention to police violence towards African Americans. Not surprisingly, there is a whole group of people who are very upset about it. The most vocal among them speak of disrespecting the flag and disrespecting the troops who fought under that flag. Many of those same people choose to fly the Confederate battle flag rather than the stars and stripes on their own houses in the back of their trucks. And in a yet another act of oblivious irony, when Kaepernick takes a knee during the national anthem, those very same people can probably be found sitting in front of a TV sipping on a beer with America emblazoned on the side of the can, which is actually a product of a Belgian company. And then doubling down on the irony, printed across, no joke, the top of the can, the first four bars of, anyone want to guess? The national anthem. Let's go back and quote Orwell again. Nationalism is power hunger tempered by self-deception. Every nationalist is capable of the most flagrant dishonesty, but he is also unshakably certain of being in the right. Part of that, quote, flagrant dishonesty that Orwell is talking about here is cognitive dissonance, or the ability to criticize Kaepernick for not respecting the flag and the anthem while you yourself aren't measuring your patriotism based on the same disrespect of it. The Kaepernick case also points to an even more dangerous side of nationalism we're currently experiencing in the U.S. In a lot of ways, the nationalism that's being practiced is a response to the changing demographics of the U.S. Folks who have long held power in the U.S. are seeing a revolutionary shift. America is looking less and less like them. And worse yet, at least for those who have traditionally held power, this new America wants leadership that looks more like them. In other words, not a bunch of old white men. The election of our first black president made this more clear than ever. The old white men are losing their stronghold on power. As Orwell says, nationalism is inseparable from the desire for power. The abiding purpose of every nationalist is to secure more power and more prestige. Not surprisingly, the white male nationalist movement of America was carefully and calculatingly revved up by those who were seeing their power threatened. It's important to not too easily overlook the white part of that statement I just made. In a nation that is struggling with racism, in a nation where leaders like Dr. King have helped draw us more closely together as we recognize that we're all truly created equal, in a nation where the most powerful elected official is a black man, we are finding the racial divide growing once again. Movements like Black Lives Matter continue to try to bring attention to the issue, but are met by responses grown out of white privilege, like All Lives Matter, and even the burning down of some of the more outspoken black churches. Now, to make matters worse, this white male nationalist movement of America, well, it's co-opting religion. You only need to look at our current presidential election to see it. One candidate has recently become a Christian, and the other is a lifetime Methodist. Which one is more likely to be touted as the Christian one then? Well, logic would dictate that it's the one that has been a lifetime Christian. Nationalism dictates otherwise. Not only is that candidate female, but the other candidate is towing the nationalist party line. And if there's one thing nationalists excel at, it is cognitive dissonance. So, the candidate who recently discovered religion somehow becomes the candidate of God. I can't help but wonder if the nationalist co-opting of religion is connected to yet another issue that I've yet to mention. You see, it's not just the white male nationalist movement. It's the straight white male nationalist movement, or at least the appearance of straight male nationalist movement. As Americans once again begin to increasingly become aware that indeed we do believe that all lives are created equally. We've seen the extending of rights to the LGBT community. Once again, threatening the power structure of the old straight white male. If, as I said earlier, spirituality is beliefs and practices that give us a sense of connecting to something bigger than ourselves, if it opens us up to possibilities and connects us with others, and I do believe it does, then nationality is the enemy. Nationality, much like institutionalized religion, presents a very narrow worldview. Rather than opening us up to possibilities, it prefers to close us off with fear. After all, fear is great for controlling people. Rather than connecting us with all of humanity, it prefers to segregate us, separate us, and elevate those who are most similar to us to places of privilege. Nationalism is a spirituality killer. But more than that, it's a society killer as well. This isn't simply true from a moralistic point of view, which recognizes that nationalism promotes violence and bullying and marginalizing. But it's also true in a more pragmatic way when you play out nationalism to its natural consequences. As I've alluded to already, one of the most effective tools of nationalism is fear. They are coming for your guns. They are coming for your jobs. They are coming for your women and children and so on. For nationalism to work, there must always be a they. They aren't like us. They are jealous of how great we are and want to hurt us. It's all well and good when they are a distant somebody in another country, but some of them need to be here, close by. Nationalists need to be able to worry that one of them might do something deplorable in a public bathroom or in their own bedroom or maybe in a public forum. Better yet, at least in terms of how nationalism works, they need you to worry about it. They can then use your fear to motivate you to feel superior to others. That kind of a divided nation, that kind of a divided society is unstable and self-sabotaging. It will ultimately live a short life in terms of the long history of the rise and fall of nations. One of the biggest misconceptions in U.S. politics is that the system works from the top down, from trickle-down economics to third parties putting so much effort into presidential candidates. We have bought heavily into the idea that we live in a society that starts at the top and filters to the bottom. The reality is that if we want real change, if we want significant change, it actually has to start at the bottom. We have to provide a wide and stable foundation from which we can grow. If we're talking about economics, it means making sure that everyone makes a livable wage. If we want more than a two-party system, we need to focus on getting candidates we support elected to local and state positions. If we're talking about spirituality, we need to become more active in movements like Black Lives Matter. We need to become more actively participating in diverse communities and celebrating the diversity of our own community. And finally, we need to stand up and speak out. Every time that we see someone being marginalized, someone being bullied, we need to, at every turn, proclaim the value and equality of every life, even those with whom we disagree, which means, yes, even those of the nationalists. Now's your opportunity to respond to the talk for today. Is there anyone who wants to share their perspective or thoughts? Over here.
Good morning.
Morning.
With your preparation of this program, do you feel that there is an organized program building and developing what's happening to our country and our world, or is it just evolving?
I think it's both. I mean, I think nationalism is evolving, but those in power who are losing their power have decided to co-opt it in a way that heightens the divisions. So I think it's both. I think that it's naturally forming, but I think it's been encouraged as well.
So it'd be a Forrest Gump situation.
Right.
And I'm Sue, and from everything I'm reading, rise in nationalism is not certainly not just U.S. In Europe, their nationalistic parties are just having meteoric rises in the polls, and with a distinct possibility that they may take power in a number of countries.
Hi, I'm Elsie. I guess you talked about things that I see and that worry me. And again, if you can, what I really need are examples of how people do speak up. I find myself hesitant because what you can get back, or a lot of cruelty, and even death, people get death threats, and examples and how we can support each other in responding in ways that are more connected. Mm-hmm. I have been thinking about how I can let people know that I see the parts of themselves where they do care about other people, and they are honest, and they have integrity. Because I think we give up our integrity if we succumb to our fear or the other person's fear.
Well, I mean, I would just point to things like I mentioned, like joining Black Lives Matter movements. Right now in Charlotte, there's a really well put together movement that's going on, that they offer training, so that you understand some of the questions that you're talking about. I'm not going to pretend like that I am a specialist in that area and can tell you the exact things that we need to do. Moral Mondays would be another example here in North Carolina, because part of it is the numbers that show up. The more that folks show up, the more that those who are hesitant to align with certain groups are going to feel more secure because the numbers are large enough. It'll also tell the society around there, whether or not news is covering it, that it is a matter that the public is very adamant about. And in your personal life, it's a question of deciding whether or not you're going to stand up to friends who see it a different way. There's certainly kind ways of doing so, but even when you do it the kind way, you've got to be willing to suffer the negative feedback and possibly losing friendships. I have had death threats real death threats that I had to report to the police, and lost many, many friends for just saying very clearly what I think is the right way of being in terms of valuing life. But going to something like a Black Lives Matter rally, but going to the training beforehand, that training is invaluable and really can help a lot in understanding some of the very questions you're talking about. I wish I had more specific answers for you. It kind of depends on the situation, I think, as to how you do it.
Yeah, those are great suggestions. It's something that I wanted to get involved with more also. But this whole idea of exclusionism has always been a great mystery to me. Nationalism is just a manifestation of that. And why the certain fear-ridden groups of human beings feel the need to exclude and condemn and outcast other groups simply because they're not part of their blessed group. And it is found in a number of Orthodox religions. Christianity has taken it into the Baptist evangelical group. In the Old Testament, it's written down. I mean, it's written down with Jehovah condemning various groups and even advocating mass murder, if you want to be frank about it. Islam, in the Quran, it's in there. It's in the Book of Mormon. There are other religions that are not quite as concentrated on that, but there are elements of it. So how does it arise in human consciousness is a question I have. This fear of the other, this condemnation, this rage and actual wanting to cut it out, destroy it, get rid of it, which, of course, is impossible because the other is in us as well. So that's a question I'm still left with and ponder.
Thank you. I'm Morgan. I just wanted to echo what Zora said, because I was having similar thoughts as I reflected on the message that the history of the Judeo-Christian tradition is fraught with those dilemmas. What started out as more of a tribal warrior god kind of evolved to where we see, many Christians now see God as love and peace and harmony and all of that, but yet throughout the Bible you see death and destruction and fighting over territory and advancing and claiming. And so how can we blame those folks who are embodying that? Even to this day, they have quite a bit of evidence or documentation in their favor. And so the other thing I would say, too, is that it was interesting how you were talking about distinguishing between spirituality and religion, and casting spirituality more in a positive light, religion having more of a negative connotation, when both can have positive or negative aspects. They tend to serve different purposes and interests, and even can be part of a life cycle. I feel like, when people start moving out of religious institutions, it's because there's some kind of dysfunction or decay happening, but it may not be so much long before the new spirituality then morphs into a religion or an institution. So it's a tough line to walk. How do we embody the values of our faith while also being cognizant of the competing interests that exist and the pain and frustration that a lot of people are going through, and they may be flocking to particular so-called leaders because of that. I think we should still be mindful of the very real needs that those folk, that part of the population has? How do we meet them while also addressing the very real needs of other people as well?
Are there others?
I'll be real quick. I just encourage everyone to try to read a book called The World Before Until Yesterday, where Jared Diamond really researches what human society was like when we were small hunter-gatherer, small groups, some of the really wonderful things that went on. And one aspect that was fascinating to me is that when people were living, anyone who was not really known to you, clearly a part of your tribe, was another. And if you met them, you killed them, or they killed you. I mean, that's what you, that was a lot of what life was like. And it's a new phenomenon to not see people as other, and I guess we're still trying to figure out how to see everyone as part of our tribe.
I know this probably is an oversimplification of the difference between patriotism and nationalism. To me, patriotism is when you see someone else burning the flag, you're hurt, and you hurt for that. You hurt for them. Nationalism is when you see someone burning the flag and you hate or you're angry.